Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Party and the People, Chinese Politics in the 21st Century, by Bruce Dixon, narrated by Eric Jason Martin. Publisher's note: in this audio edition, you will hear references to figures present in the print and e-book formats of the book. Introduction. In September 2011, the people of Wukan, a village in southeastern China, rose up in protest. Their elected leaders, they alleged, had sold land to developers without adequate payment to those who had made their livelihoods farming it. They marched on the government headquarters in nearby Lufeng City, demanding both compensation and the right to new elections. The leaders of Lufeng did not accede to their demands. Instead, they sent riot police to Wukan to shut down the protests and occupy the village. Over the course of several months, the village endured a standoff with police, and a handful of protesters were arrested and charged with attacking officers. One of the protesters, Zhu Jinbo, died in custody. According to Zhu's family, the body showed signs of torture, but the official cause of death was cardiac arrest. Tensions between police and the villagers escalated. Situations like this are all too common in China. Leaders ignore the legitimate demands of the people and punish those who dare to push back against the unpopular and often illegal actions of leaders at all levels of the political system. And then something extraordinary happened. The provincial leaders stepped in and agreed to the protesters' demands. They offered to investigate the compensation the Wukan farmers had received, and they fired the Wukan leaders who sold the land, arranging for new elections to replace them. One of the leaders of the protest, Lin Zuluan, was elected the new village chief. The protests and their resolution were hailed as a potentially new model of grassroots democracy in China. Provincial party chief Wang Yang, soon to be elevated to the Politburo in Beijing, said he intended to use his peaceful Wukan approach to reform local politics across the province. But, as is so often the case in Chinese politics, there was more to the story than this. Like the deposed village chief, the newly elected leader was a party member. He had been approved by the provincial party committee, which had intervened to prevent the protests from escalating. The Wukan protests did not spread to other communities, in part because of a blackout on media coverage of the protests, and in part because of fear of arrest. What looked to be a pro-democratic triumph was actually the Chinese Communist Party, CCP, reimposing its authority. Lin, the new village chief, was himself charged with corruption several years later. Was this delayed retaliation for leading the original protest, or a reminder that even protest leaders may fall prey to the same bad behaviors as those they once protested against? It's hard to say, because the domestic media blackout continued, and the people of Wukan were warned against speaking to foreign media. What originally seemed like the start of something big turned out to be just one more small-scale event that, while it did break out into global news, went unnoticed by most people in China. In the end, the Wukan approach did not spread. This episode illustrates well many of the themes familiar to students of Chinese politics. The imperative from the CCP to create economic growth by, for instance, converting farmland for industrial and commercial purposes creates tensions between state and society as local leaders take actions that align with the party but infuriate local citizens. With stability as another policy imperative, higher-level officials are often tacit allies of local citizens when tensions boil over, willing to remove local leaders to defuse conflict. In these instances, the CCP is responsive to public opinion, but will not tolerate demands that would challenge its monopoly on power. To understand China in the 21st century, we must begin with one basic fact: all political activity centers on the CCP. how the party has approached economic, political, and social reforms over the past few decades, and the reversal of many of these reforms under the current leadership, shaped not only the political system, but also the party's relationship with the people. In the decades after Mao's rule ended, major reforms transformed economic and social life in China. The private sector greatly expanded, and the country opened up to connect to the global economy. As it did, incomes rose, mobility increased, and Chinese people began to move from the countryside to the cities. All of this change created expectations among foreign observers that China's political system would have to change as well. These expectations of political change were influenced by modernization theory, which is based on one of the most well-established relationships in the social sciences. The more prosperous a country is, the more likely it is to be a democracy. According to this theory, an increasingly modernized economy is ultimately incompatible with an authoritarian regime, as economic modernization triggers social changes, urbanization, higher levels of education, the decline of agriculture in favor of industry and commerce, the emergence of a middle class, that change political values, and these new values in turn produce demands for a more open political system. This is what happened in the Western world in the 18th and 19th centuries, and in East Asia and Latin America in the late 20th century. However, China's leaders had a different expectation. Going back to Deng Xiaoping and continuing under Xi Jinping, the CCP expected that economic modernization, if handled properly, would produce popular support and solidify its hold on power. Greater prosperity was intended to enhance the CCP's legitimacy, not threaten its survival. They wanted to preserve the essential elements of the one-party regime they established in 1949, with the CCP firmly in command of the policy goals, of who would be allowed to participate in the political system, and of the ideas and interests that would be allowed or, alternatively, suppressed. Unlike democratic regimes, the legitimacy of the regime would be based not on the consent of the governed, but on its ability to modernize the country. To a large degree, China's leaders have achieved their goals. There are certainly democracy advocates in China, but they find little support among their fellow citizens, who place a higher value on economic growth, social stability, and national unity, the same priorities as the parties, than on the political rights and freedoms that democracy promises. China's leaders have been determined to avoid political liberalization that would weaken party rule, even if it yielded better economic results. They were willing to settle for poorer economic results, if necessary, to maintain the party's supremacy, and have resisted and repressed all efforts to promote political reform leading to democratization. But with the international financial crisis in 2008, after 15 years of double-digit growth, China entered a new phase. Slower economic growth, 6.1% in 2019, has become the new normal. The economy even shrank by 6.8% in the first quarter of 2020, but that was an aberration due to the COVID-19 epidemic. Under President Xi Jinping, China is turning away from the reform and opening policies championed by his predecessor Deng Xiaoping and toward a still ill-defined socialism with Chinese characteristics for a new era. China's contemporary political system is best described as responsiveness without accountability. Just as it was in Wuhan, the party is often responsive to public opinion on strictly material issues. When new initiatives spark public opposition, the party has agreed to cancel the building of hydroelectric dams, petrochemical plants, and high-speed rail lines. After public outrage about the worsening air quality in major cities, it adopted stricter air pollution standards. Faced with a surge of protests and petitions about inadequate compensation for land seized for
sample complete. Ready to continue?